Hello, and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the August 3rd issue of People Magazine, Oprah Daily, the online daily newsletter, and the summer edition of Real Simple. A few of the articles that I'll share today include Rosie's Back, The Postpartum Fix No One Talks About, and Why Modern Life Feels Like a Panic Attack in Slow Motion. Rosie's Back. After moving to Ireland in 2025, the comic with the common touch returns with an intimate one-woman show about family, the one she came from and the one she raised, by Liz McNeil, photographs by Allison Michael Orenstein. This is a People Magazine exclusive. The last time Rosie O'Donnell saw her mother, she was on the green couch in the good living room where we were never allowed to go, the star recalls. I was learning how to look up words in the dictionary, and she asked me to look up beautiful. She was so moved, and I was so happy that I leaned in close, and I hurt her. She winced in pain and said, "Be careful, Roseanne." "I have not always been careful in my life," adds O'Donnell, "but what she taught me stayed with me, which is to endure, to make people laugh, and to lead with love." 3 days later, Roseanne O'Donnell died of breast cancer at 39. "The defining moment of my life," says O'Donnell, 64, her namesake. But it wasn't until she moved to Ireland in January 2025 that the mom of five, Parker, 31, Chelsea, 28, Blake, 26, Vivian, 23, and Clay, 13, started writing about Roseanne and her own experience being a mother while being motherless. Intimate stories that have since turned into her new one-woman show, Common Knowledge, which opens at New York City's Daryl Roth Theater on July 22nd. Happily back in the city with Clay, who is autistic and non-binary, for the summer, O'Donnell is overjoyed to be closer to her newest grandchild, Blake's four-month-old son, Anthony. She also recently visited her daughter, Chelsea, now sober, who's serving an 18-month sentence for drug possession, and says, "There's finally hope on the horizon." Candid, unfiltered, and still obsessed with Barbara Streisand, O'Donnell runs into pals wherever she goes, including during her People photo shoot on the streets of New York. "Hey, Rosie," says a passerby. "Hey, Frankie, how are you?" she says. Turns out it's her friend, Frankie Grande, singer Ariana Grande's brother, and the star of Broadway's hit musical, Titanic. From her TikTok rambles on everything from politics to parenting to her recent facelift to her upcoming guest host spot for Jimmy Kimmel Live, O'Donnell's enjoying being back in the spotlight. It's funny to be re-famous at 64. What was the biggest surprise about Ireland? The peace that I feel there. It's not a celebrity-obsessed culture. When people see me, they don't say, "Could I have your picture?" They say, "Welcome, Rosie." Everywhere I looked, I saw people who looked like my family. 90-year-old women in the supermarket. If my mom lived, that would have been her. And I started writing about her and being a mother while being motherless. How have you coped with the grief over the years? There are two dividing lines in my life. My mother's death on March 17, 1973, and the birth of my first son, Parker, on June 14, 1995. It was difficult to not have a mom when you get your period and you need a bra. My best friend Jackie's mother, Bernice, got me my first training bra. I don't think you ever get over it. But hearing your child call you mama the first time, and now watching my 26-year-old son hold his baby, really did heal many of my maternal wounds. What does being a mom mean to you? People sometimes say, "That's so great that you adopted. You saved those kids." And I say, "Those kids saved me." Each kid was like a floaty, and I was staying afloat because of my desire to give them a loving family that said, "I love you," which was never said in my house. Every time I hang up the phone, I say, "I love you," and my kids say, "Yeah, Mom, you've told us." What have you learned from parenting an autistic child? Clay's vulnerability has forced me to be more connected and attached, and for us to be close in a way that I hadn't been with my other kids. Autism is so miraculously curious. Clay understands very big concepts for a kid who's only 13. They said to me once, "Do you realize that Cleopatra lived closer to the invention of the iPhone than she did to the completion of the pyramids of Giza?" Common knowledge. Hence the name of my show. I went into the bathroom and Googled that, and it's true. What about your older kids? I love the fact that my kids still need me. My son Blake said, "Mommy, I want you to move back to be around my baby." And that really hit home. The joy that I feel being around him and this newborn, I don't have the words for it. How are things with Chelsea these days? She's sober, and that changed everything. She ran away at 17 to her birth mother and to a very drug-addled community in Wisconsin. I recently visited her in prison, which was overwhelmingly emotional, but I saw the kid that I used to know. She calls every day and we talk. You've lost nearly 60 pounds with the GLP-1. Mounjaro changed my life. I couldn't even pronounce it at first. I started 3 years ago when I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was stunned at how it quieted the food noise. I've had trouble with my weight my whole life. I know the shame and humiliation dealt to people who are overweight. My kids would come home from trick-or-treating with pillowcases full of candy and hide it. Smart children. I'd wake up at 3 a.m. and go, "There's a Nestle's Crunch Bar somewhere." I couldn't help myself. How has the weight loss changed your life? It's very strange to just buy a pair of jeans that fit. When I would do late night, my biggest concern wasn't my set. It was, did I look fat? On League of Their Own, director Penny Marshall didn't help by saying, "Rosie, I want you to lose 20 pounds. I'm like, "You think I carry it around for fun, Penny?" When I look back, I go, "God, I wish I could have enjoyed the size I was." I'm now at that same weight, but I feel much healthier, more powerful in my own physicality. You also decided to have a deep plain facelift. I lost so much weight that I had a lot of excess skin here, pointing to her chin, and it made me look sad. People in Ireland said, "Rosie, are you all right, love?" I'm like, "It's my face. I actually feel happy here." I didn't want my face to be frozen. I had to wrestle with myself because, as a feminist, I always felt this is the male gaze and not anything I believe in. Clay said, "Mommy, girls look up to you. What does your legacy stand for if you do this?" I changed my mind for 6 months and then decided the real power of feminism is to decide what we want to do with our bodies and when. You've been refreshingly open about it. I didn't make it public until everyone started saying, "You look so much better. What are you doing?" I didn't want to be one of these people who says, "Oh, nothing. So why do I look like this? $90,000. I was worried about the cost. I don't like to waste money. I would never spend that on a car. And Clay didn't notice? Still hasn't. I hope they don't pick up People magazine, but you never know. Thoughts on life at 64? It's glorious. When you're 40 or 30, you're worried all the time. Am I doing it right? Now, I don't really care. It used to be when our president would say things about me, it would be like, whoa. If you had written this as a movie, a stand-up comic makes fun of a reality show host, and he ends up being the president, and then he doesn't shut up about her for 20 years, it would be unbelievable. The fact that it's my life is very trippy. You and Madonna are still super close friends. We text and I go to her house and we talk about the kids. She ran a very tight ship. I had a very not tight ship. Her kids Lola and Rocco would come over for a play date and I'd give them an ice pop, turn on the cartoons. I'd never met another woman whose mother died and they're named after the mother. When you go to the gravesite, you see your name on the tombstone. When we met, it was the first thing I said. My mom died when I was young, and I was named after her too. It's like we became sisters at that moment. Are you in a romantic relationship or interested? I am interested. Now that Clay's 13 and I'm in a good place, I would like to be in love again. But I'm one of those people. I think everyone just wants to be friends. If you don't have a sign that says, "I'm trying to date you," I totally don't get it. I have to turn that part of my body or my brain on. You and Clay clearly have a special connection. We were out and there was a child crying and a mother comforting him. I don't know if the child had autism, but I thought it was a possibility. I started to cry, and Clay grabbed my hand. When we got home, Clay said, "You know what I noticed since we got to Ireland? You're softer now." I said, "Thank you for noticing. I love you very much." And then Clay rolls their eyes like all my kids do. "Yeah, I know, Mom." My show is a love letter to Clay as well, even though when I'm rehearsing, they will say, "I never said that. That's an exaggeration." I always say, "Do you want to come see it?" And Clay responds, "It is one-sided, and not only your opinion matters, Mommy." I'm like, "You're damn right. I can't wait till you write your own show." Rosie's Family Album. Lasting Love. It's over 50 years, and I still miss her, says O'Donnell of Mom Roseanne. A kid at heart. Rosie, with her four oldest children, Parker, Chelsea, Vivian, and Blake, in Miami in 2003. Next gen. He's a little nugget, says O'Donnell of grandson Anthony, with son Blake, his wife Teresa, and Clay Center in April. Making 'em laugh. Star Search. After O'Donnell won for comedy on the talent competition program in 1984 and launched her stand-up career, she returned for a 1987 special. A League of Their Own. The 1992 film is her favorite, she says, because we got to play baseball and I met some lifelong friends, including Madonna. The Rosie O'Donnell Show. She hosted her talk show from 1996 to 2002 and earned the nickname the Queen of Nice for her friendly banter. The View. With Barbara Walters, Joy Behar, and Elizabeth Hasselbeck in 1997, she and Hasselbeck got along until the end. Then it blew up on national TV. This has been a People Magazine exclusive. Rosie's Back. The Evolution of Emmy Rossum. The actress opens up about embracing darker roles and raising her kids in New York City. By Brianne Tracy from People Magazine. Emmy Rossum will turn 40 on September 12th, and rather than seeing it as an end of an era, she's looking at it as the start of a new one. I think the great thing about getting older is you don't have to be the ingenue anymore, says the actress and mom of two. Parts get a lot juicier, a lot darker, and that's really where I feel I thrive. The Evolution is on full display in Rossum's new Hulu crime drama, Furious. She stars as Alice, an FBI agent with a traumatic past, tracking down a female serial killer. Best known for playing the flawed but fiercely loyal Fiona Gallagher on the Showtime dramedy Shameless, Rossum has always gravitated toward imperfect heroines. I'm interested in people that exist in a moral gray area, she says. I'm interested in things that make me uncomfortable or scared because it says that there's something about me or society that I need to think more deeply about. Motherhood has also reshaped the way Rossum, who shares a daughter 5 and son 3 with her husband, Mr. Robot creator Sam Esmail, 48, approaches work. With my kids, I am no less ambitious, but slightly pickier than I might have been, she says. I have to be really obsessed with something to want to be away from them. Following her exit from Shameless in 2019, 3 years after she successfully won equal pay with co-star William H. Macy, Rossum shifted her focus to her own production company, Composition 8, to take greater control of her career. Although some still assume she left the series, which went on for 2 more seasons, to start a family, she doesn't dwell on this speculation. I think it's important to keep your head down, stay focused, and have fun, says Rossum, who became a star at 17 with roles in movies like The Day After Tomorrow and The Phantom of the Opera. You know what you're building. Other people don't have to. Now living back in her hometown of New York City, Rossum says her everyday routines with her husband, whom she met while making the 2014 Comet, and their kids, whose names remain private, keep her grounded. I ride public transportation and eat at all the places I did when I was a kid, she says. I get to see my mom and be a mom. She and Esmael use cards called the Fair Play Deck to help delegate household and parenting responsibilities. Right now, Sam's got middle-of-the-night care. My son was up 4 times last night, and he got up every time to make sure he had what he needed. He's just very, very kind. Her own childhood looked different. Raised by her single mother, Cheryl, a photographer, Rossum met her father, who split from her mom before Rossum was born, for the first time at age 4, seeing him once more at 8, and not again until her 20s. Watching my husband with my kids, especially my daughter, is amazing, she says. I get to watch her get something that I didn't have. As 40 approaches, Rossum is looking forward to celebrating with a murder mystery scavenger hunt. Professionally, she wants to continue writing and making things while keeping space for surprises. I'm excited to not know what's coming. Growing up on screen, the day after tomorrow, she was just 17 when the 2004 thriller premiered, with her and love interest Jake Gyllenhaal struggling to survive a global ice age. The Phantom of the Opera. It felt like a dream, she says, of getting to play Christine opposite Gerard Butler's Phantom in 2004. Shameless. Rossum definitely felt emboldened by playing Fiona from 2011 to 2019. Furious. To prep for her new show, Rossum shadowed FBI agents and gained 10 pounds of muscle by weight training and eating a lot of beef sticks. Stars aligned. Rossum describes husband Esmael as an honest, funny, bright, and hardworking Virgo. The Brother P. Touch label maker gets used a lot. This has been The Evolution of Emmy Rossum from People Magazine. The postpartum fix no one talks about. Take a closer look at pelvic floor therapy with a mom who's been there. Find out what it actually involves, why so many symptoms get dismissed, and how treatment can make life normal again. From Women's Health Magazine. You've probably heard at some point that pregnancy and childbirth affect your pelvic floor. It's mentioned almost casually, lumped in with stretch marks and swollen ankles. What no one really conveys is the real scale of it, how much the stress on these muscles can affect your day-to-day life long after you deliver. Even I, a health journalist and pre- and postnatal certified trainer, did not appreciate how much those muscles would be begging for help postpartum. I had a C-section delivery, so I assumed I wouldn't need to worry. Spoiler alert, I did, in fact, still need pelvic floor physical therapy postpartum. Most people don't think about their pelvic floor until it forces them to, says Carrie Pagliano, DPT. Leakage, pain, pressure, those are the entry points. Almost a year after my first baby was born, I found myself at the first pelvic floor physical therapy session. I had pain with sex and urine leakage if I sneezed, jumped, or laughed. But I brushed those things off as my new norm. The therapy was almost instantly helpful, so much so that I went back after my second baby before I even started having symptoms. Your first pelvic floor PT appointment will be an assessment. Your therapist will ask questions and examine you to understand what's going on. They may take a look at your back and hips, check your movement patterns, and assess how you breathe. An internal assessment is also typical early on, where a therapist places one or two fingers inside your vagina with your consent to assess the strength and coordination of your pelvic floor muscles. The reality is that, by some estimates, up to a third of women in the U.S. will experience a pelvic floor disorder. Pregnancy and childbirth are top contributors. Generally, pelvic floor physical therapy addresses muscles, nerves, connective tissues, how you breathe, posture, and movement patterns, says Julianne Lane, DPT. My bottom line, your pelvic floor isn't something you have to just deal with. Feeling strong, supported, and symptom-free shouldn't be some pleasant surprise. It should be our expectation. From Amy Maturana Winderl. You've been listening to The Postpartum Fix No One Talks About from Women's Health Magazine. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. Get it done. Summer chores. Kaishan Lane, the creator behind @weeklyhomecheck, shares 6 timely tasks that deserve your attention now. This is from Real Simple. Number 1, change up your ceiling fans. Set them to run counterclockwise during the summer, he says. This will push cool air downward. There's usually a small switch on the motor housing. Find it and flip it when the fan is turned off. Number 2, re-caulk showers and bathtubs. Summer is actually the best time to replace caulking, according to Lane. Warm temps help it bond better and allow you to seal gaps at their true size. Number 3, clean your washing machine. Over time, the machine collects residue from detergent and dirt and can get moldy from excess moisture. To correct both, run a cycle with a cleaning tablet, like a Fresh or Active, but without laundry. Then wipe the gaskets, dispensers, and drum with a rag dampened with diluted vinegar, Lane says. Number 4, wash all the pillows. You really should do this at least 3 times a year. They absorb sweat, oils, and allergens that pillowcases don't catch, he says. Check the care tag for instructions. And Lane offers his pro tip, wash 2 pillows at a time to keep the washing machine drum balanced. Do some easy weeding, number 5. Carefully pour boiling water on weeds in cracks for a fast, natural kill, Lane says. Focus on driveways, patios, and walkways, avoiding lawns and gardens. Number 6, prep for summer vacay. If you're going away for a weekend or longer, Lane says to turn off the main water valve, set lights on timers, and adjust the thermostat. The ideal temp to balance humidity control without blowing your energy budget is 78 degrees, he adds. You've been listening to Get It Done Summer Chores from Real Simple Magazine. William Shatner and daughter Melanie, finding new joy after cancer. After both surviving shocking stage 4 diagnoses, the father-daughter duo are savoring every moment together. By Melody Chu, photographs by Jeff Lipsky. This is a People magazine exclusive. 2 years ago, in the middle of the night, William Shatner's daughter, Melanie Shatner Gretch, really needed her dad. Deep in chemotherapy at the time for stage 4 breast cancer, I was having a moment and was hysterical, recalls Melanie. I called you and said, I think I'm dying. 15 minutes later, Shatner was standing in her driveway, reminding her of her resilience. He gave me what I think of ever since I was a little girl, as a daddy bear hug, she says. He said, this is going to be a blip in your life. You're going to get through this, and it'll be a memory. Sitting next to Melanie, 62, in the sun-soaked sitting room of her Los Angeles area home, Shatner, 95, is sharp, funny, and fiercely proud of his youngest daughter. He's also dad to her sisters, Leslie, 67, and Elizabeth, 65, with their late mom, actress Gloria Rand. We're a very together family, he emphasizes. We're bonded by all kinds of difficulties that we've overcome. It's been an especially trying few years for the Shatners. Just as Melanie was visualizing the finish line for her cancer treatment, the family was dealt another blow in June 2023 when Shatner was diagnosed with stage 4 malignant melanoma that had spread to his lungs and brain. I remember vividly thinking, I don't have the strength to take care of myself and lose my father at the same time, says Melanie. But Shatner was unshakable. They said, you got cancer. If you came in later, you would have been dead. See, that's my life, he says. I think the universe is taking care of me. It's a mantra the Montreal-born screen icon has wielded all his life, as he amassed a legion of Trekkies with his role as Captain James T. Kirk in the Star Trek franchise. Shatner steamrolled through any setbacks from grieving for his own dad when he was in his 30s to navigating multiple divorces. Today, he and Melanie are both cancer-free, and surviving their health crises has brought everything into sharp focus. I'm thinking of the miracle of a hummingbird and of my dog taking a ball and my children, he says, of finding gratitude in things both big and small. I'm aware of the magic of it all. It's an outlook that Melanie, who grew up with anxious tendencies, has also learned to embrace. On July 29th, the father-daughter duo are launching a new podcast series titled No Time But Now, on which they interview health experts and other survivors. It's easy for us in this lovely home to say, make your life meaningful. It's much more difficult to be poverty-stricken and wonder how you're going to get through it. I've been there, says Shatner. But it's also possible to endure that and be aware of the beauty around you. Adds Melanie, overcoming cancer changed my life. I'm not so afraid anymore, and there's so much freedom and joy. Melanie discovered the lump on her breast by chance in July 2022. I woke up in the middle of the night and my finger moved up right beneath my breast. I felt a little bump and I thought, it's just a bug bite, she says. Though she had had a clear mammogram 5 months earlier, she went in for an imaging appointment the next day. The technician initially found nothing concerning, but something pushed me back and said, no, have her recheck it. She put the wand exactly where I put my finger and under her breath said, now I would have missed that. Testing confirmed she had HER2 positive breast cancer that had spread to lymph nodes in her chest. A mom to two daughters with her husband, actor Joel Gretsch, she was very conscious of the importance of her life for herself and for her family, Shatner recalls. I was devastated. When she expressed concern about the enormous cost of cancer treatment, he wouldn't hear of it. You said to me, I do not want you to worry, just send me the bill, she said. Then you made me laugh so hard when I was still going to the doctor a year later. You said, you've got to get well. We're going to be in the poorhouse. Over the next year and a half, Melanie underwent multiple rounds of chemo with HER2 targeted therapies, a double mastectomy, she chose to skip reconstruction surgery, and 30 radiation therapy treatments. Chemo was the most physically draining, and the radiation I found so emotionally draining, she said. As she was in the final stretch of her treatment, a lump on her dad's cheek sparked concern. I went to the family doctor and he said, it's your salivary gland, it's blocked. Just massage it, says Shatner. The mass continued to grow, and a month later, he asked a plastic surgeon friend for his opinion. He placed his hands on my cheek and he said, with love in his voice, you better get this out. Shatner underwent surgery to remove the tumor on his face, which was followed by 2 years of immunotherapy to target the cancer in his lungs and brain. Through it all, he wouldn't stop his life. He kept working and moving forward, says Melanie. Whenever he was home, Joel and I would bring dinner to him and watch movies. Just always made sure that he's not alone. By late 2024, both were declared cancer-free. It was the third time in my life I had heard him cry, Melanie said, of telling her dad she was healthy again. They found new purpose and passion. Melanie was recently a keynote speaker at Susan G. Komen's More Than Pink Walk, and Shatner has 2 books and 2 records, including a metal album, all coming by early 2027. I'm healthier now than I've been in years. The brain is like a muscle. It feeds on activity, he says. Most important, they're pouring as much time as possible into family. Sundays used to be 3 and me. Now there's more than 15, Shatner says, with 5 grandkids and 2 great-grandkids, now joining him and his daughters for weekly dinners. Adds Melanie, he really is the patriarch. We say the big kahuna. Both are cognizant of their mortality. Says Melanie, turning to her dad, I do think you're going to outlive me, but I have always thought if you go first, then I won't be afraid because you'll be the one to be there for me when I go. Quip Shatner, it's a huge responsibility. After a long and full life, he isn't looking for more accolades. Statues are torn down at some point, he says. Legacy is doing good deeds and helping other people. That reverberates for the end of time. A tight-knit family. After Shatner and Rand divorced in 1969, I was intent on keeping my family together as much as possible, he says. Shatner took his daughters on adventurous outings and offered them what he calls a different kind of ordinary family life. Melanie has fond memories of going horseback riding and visiting a little amusement park every Sunday with her dad. Special bond. My dad has always been my favorite person, says Melanie. Proud girl dad. The three girls are so sensational, says Shatner with his daughters, Leslie, Melanie, and Elizabeth. An amazing patriarch. We vote on where we're going, says Shatner, about family, annual family getaways. His iconic roles. The Twilight Zone, 1963. After earning Broadway acclaim and moving to LA to pursue TV, Shatner landed a part as a man terrorized by a gremlin on a plane. Star Trek, 1966 to 1994. There's no question it brought me to the popularity position, says Shatner, who played Captain Kirk on the original TV show and in 7 feature films. T.J. Hooker, starring as the title police sergeant, I enjoyed the kick of driving fast cars, says Shatner, with co-stars Adrian Zmed, Richard Hurd, and Heather Locklear. The Practice, 2004. Starring as eccentric lawyer Denny Crane opposite James Spader was like a tennis game, Shatner says. You hit the ball, you hit the ball, it's fun. Boston Legal. Boston Legal, 2004 to 2008. Shatner reunited with lifelong pal Locklear. I just saw her this weekend. And earned a second Emmy on the critically acclaimed Practice spinoff. The Remarkable Recovery. We got the perfect daughters for her cancer and my cancer, emphasizes Shatner. 20 years ago, the average survival for those with his diagnosis was 6 to 8 months, says Dr. Omid Hamid, the chief of immuno-oncology at the Angeles Clinic and Research Institute, who helped develop the immunotherapies used to eradicate Shatner's tumors. Dr. Carly Thompson, a breast surgeon who worked at UCLA Health on Melanie's care team, says groundbreaking treatments have changed the game for her formerly often incurable type of metastatic cancer. Early detection screenings available for breast, lung, prostate, colorectal, and cervical cancer can be life-saving. Says Dr. Thompson, Melanie has angels on her side, and an important part of her message is she listened to them. Melanie found comfort in her dog, Blue, as she went through cancer treatment in 2022 and 2023. Shatner appeared at the SXSW Film and TV Festival in March 2023, 4 months before his tumor removal surgery. You have been listening to a People magazine exclusive, William Shatner and daughter Melanie, finding new joy after cancer. Why modern life feels like a panic attack in slow motion. We've created a world of unprecedented comfort and connection, but our brains haven't had time to catch up. Understanding that mismatch may be the first step toward feeling better. By David M.L. Rabin, M.D., Ph.D., published June 22, 2026, from Oprah Daily. Take a moment to realize how incredible our lives are right now. Back just 30 years ago, if I wanted to order my dad his favorite Italian almond cookies that aren't available in the U.S. for his birthday, I would have to go to every Italian importer I could find to get a private hookup that could take weeks. Today, I can open an app on my smartphone, and in 4 clicks, my pops has his almond cookies with his coffee 2 days later. And that's not all you can do with your smartphone. You can wake up late to your phone alarm, realizing you've slept through your early morning flight because you were out late enjoying yourself the night before. Purchase a new plane ticket in a foreign city where you don't speak the language, and order coffee and breakfast to the door of your rental apartment while you request a late checkout from your Airbnb host. Then you can call a taxi right to your door within minutes, the cab ride being just enough time to ask your AI to proofread your 30-page proposal for typos, so you can submit it to your boss in time for a critical deadline. With the Wi-Fi on the plane, you can upload all your Instagram and TikTok content to pay your bills, reschedule your rental car at your destination, make your dinner reservations, and tuck yourself in for the rest of the flight with sleepy music and soothing vibes to make sure you're well-rested in your new time zone. That's just a few examples, let alone cars and planes and smartphones themselves, and the astounding effort and millions of people it took to discover the centuries of science needed to build them. It's simply stunning how much work and human collaboration across millions of people over the years were required to buy a car, to build a car, and to give us all a hope of having one someday. Yet, despite the extraordinary level of convenience and comfort for which our forefathers and foremothers fought tooth and nail so that all future generations could have easier lives, we now find ourselves in this current generation on the brink of not only losing it all, but of complete self-annihilation of our species, i.e., by creating conditions whereby the Earth is no longer hospitable for human life. Did we become so comfortable that we forgot certain critically important parts about being human beings? What happened to collaboration itself, play, empathy, and connection? The components of which greatness is built. The very stuff that helped us to finally achieve the tremendous victory of becoming the most comfortable generation in human history. Was too much convenience toxic to the human brain? I had to find out for myself. But one thing I did know for certain, if one of us doesn't figure this out quickly, we're in for a very uncomfortable ride, to say the least. Hunter S. Thompson once wrote, "Buy the ticket, take the ride." What he didn't say is that the ride is now on subscription, auto-renewing monthly. The new madness is sanity itself, or at least its imitation. Everyone's so busy appearing balanced that they've forgotten what balance feels like. They meditate to perform calmness. They journal to prove self-awareness. They microdose to make their anxiety more productive. You start to realize that what we call mental health and wellness have become a social performance, an algorithmic dance between public neuroses and private collapse. Our institutions reward dysregulation. Our technologies monetize attention. And our culture celebrates exhaustion as a kind of sacrament. I see it clinically every day. Most of the patients who come to me aren't looking for truth. They're looking for relief from the absurdity of pretending to have it all together. What they really need, though most don't know it, is permission to stop running, to feel their bodies again, to remember that peace isn't a prize at the end of the productivity marathon. It's the default state beneath the noise. We've medicalized discomfort and industrialized distraction. The tobacco companies sell nicotine. The pharmaceutical companies sell serotonin. The tech companies sell dopamine. The spiritual influencers sell oxytocin. In between them all is the human animal sweating, scrolling, and wondering why life feels like a panic attack in slow motion. When I look at the data, not the wearable kind, but the deep, biological kind, the problem is clear. We're overstimulated primates with undernourished nervous systems. Our ancestors faced tigers. We face email. Same amygdala, different jungle. Fear is supposed to keep us alive. In this current version of real life, it's keeping us from living. This is the human zoo. A place where ancient biology is trying its very best inside a world built by caffeinated apes with broadband. Where we confuse stimulation for aliveness and exhaustion for importance. Where rest feels like failure and presence feels unproductive. Here's the paradox. Nothing about this makes you weak. It makes us exquisitely human. I say us because we're all in this zoo together. Your nervous system is not broken. It's overinformed, overstimulated. It has been asked to track more social signals in a single morning than our ancestors encountered in a week in the 1950s. I'm not here to scold you for struggling. I'm here to sit beside you on the enclosure floor, to slide you a banana and say, yeah, this place is loud. To remind you that many of the zoo's cage bars are imaginary, and to help you remember what safety actually feels like in a body. Because beneath the buzzing, the striving, the cortisol-marinated ambition, and endless self-monitoring, there is a calm, wise animal inside you. One who knows how to breathe. One who remembers stillness. One who values connection more than performance. One who never asked to become a notification receptacle. That animal isn't gone. It's just been waiting for you to notice it again. This has been why modern life feels like a panic attack in slow motion. From Oprah Daily. A case for not being happy all the time. From Real Simple Magazine. On a recent episode of Anything Goes with Emma Chamberlain, before announcing an indefinite break, Chamberlain floated an idea that stuck with us. What if life's lows are just as necessary as the highs? Let's say the impossible came true and you found a way to be happy all the time, she said. I have a hypothesis that you would get so bored, you'd feel almost weirdly dead inside from the lack of push and pull. In that vacuum, we might even create our own drama just to feel something, she explained. It's a pattern she noticed in relationships and careers, where things are going so well that people instinctively disrupt them. In an informal office poll, those we ask could relate, we crave a dynamic life experience. That's what makes life rich, Chamberlain said. Just something to remember the next time you're in a low or even a high. You've just heard a case for not being happy all the time from Real Simple. Well, that will do it for today's Women's Hour. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the show today, and will join us again next week for another collection of women's magazine articles. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream as well as access shows on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona apps for Apple and Android. Have a wonderful day and be sure to stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.